Welcome back to the Doctor Who Flashcast. I'm Jason Snell. We are here to talk about the penultimate episode of Season 1 on Disney Plus and the BBC of Doctor Who. It is The Legend of Ruby Sunday, and I am joined this time by just Chip Sutterth. Hi, Chip.
I'm just Chip.
So, this may be one of our shorter episodes only because it is the traditional Russell T. Davis two-part finale where everything is build up, everything is set up, everything is cliffhanger, everything is reveal, and then you have a whole other episode for resolution. So in some ways, I might argue that this is a review-proof episode because you can't, what can you say? There are things we're going to say about it, right? But there, what can you say about an episode that has no ending and really is just about placing cards on the table to all be parts of a trick next week? But that's where we are with The Legend of Ruby Sunday. It is very much set up for next week's episode.
So I'm not willing to say yet that it's review proof because I feel like I want to review it. And Jason, I didn't like it. It is review proof in the sense that it's sort of, you can't pass a final judgment because it genuinely is part one of two, no matter what the episode title says. But I had the exact same feeling that I had after The End of Time part one, all the way back in 2010. And I remember the episode of the 2 Minute Time Lord podcast that I did on that one, and it did not stand on its own. It did not stand on its own. Now I came around on End of Time Part Two and on the whole thing as sort of a package. A fair few of my friends and fellow podcasters did not, but as an individual standalone episode, you're right. It was absolutely It was absolutely all set up, and a lot of that setup felt silly, as did End of Time, as did End of Time Part One, and so yeah. If Empire of Death turns out to be a really great episode, then the sins of The Legend of Ruby Sunday may be forgiven. But for now, Jason, I was just left cold by it.
I was going to say at the beginning, my review of it was going to be, well, there was certainly a lot of stuff, wasn't there?
Yeah.
There's lots of incident, lots of things are going on, lots of stuff is thrown at you all at once. And then you're left with no resolution. So you in that moment, there's a big reveal and it looks scary and there's a cliffhanger. And like, I think, you know, loud Murray Gold music and lots of quick cuts between different things and people in peril and secret identities revealed. That's a Russell T. Davis playbook thing. We've seen it before. It is loud and exciting as a, like, almost like a thrill ride for a while, but full of sound and fury signifying nothing. I mean, there's some aspect to it. I agree. This one didn't really work for me. There are things about it that I thought were fine, but there were lots of things about it that I thought were ridiculous. I appreciate that we're all talking aside, you know, as the season is going, about like speculation about like Susan Twist, and then there's the whole like TARDIS anagram, and we're like, well, that's pretty obvious. And I appreciated that this episode was like, well, yes, that anagram was obvious, but then in the same breath says it's this other less notable wordplay that actually is meaningful, which is ludicrous. So on one level, if you're willing to go with it, great. Like, if you're willing to go with the idea that essentially the god of death, one of the greatest supernatural forces in the universe, likes to have word games to troll the Doctor, then sure. But I didn't, you know, and on the meta level, it's sort of like, it's just sort of the Russell T. Davis playbook again. I like that he is winking at the playbook, but he's also still playing the plays out of the playbook. But the thing that bothered me the most, Chip, and I'm wondering if this if you twig to this or not. The thing that bothered me the most is this episode really wants to conflate the mystery of Ruby's origins with the mystery of this woman who keeps appearing through time and space. And I don't think the show has ever actually made the case that they're connected in any way. And the fact that the stories are happening simultaneously, it really wants us to think they're connected. I'm still not sure they're connected. I don't really understand why. The case has never been made. And if they're not connected, it's also very weird that the doctor is like, yeah, yeah, mysterious woman about to give worldwide thing in 2 hours, but let's go to the videotape, literally, and see if we can do the mystery of Ruby's history at the same time. And like that really bothered me, because if they seem proximate but not connected, other than that they're both in the same episode. And that it strikes me as being, you know, a frustrating join of those two things that may or may not actually be connected. That just really bothered me.
I agree with that. I think that they may still be connected. The connection almost relies on a lot of meta stuff itself, and we've been talking about meta all season long. That it's possible that the showrunner knows that they're connected,
sure,
and therefore the characters behave as though they're connected, even though the plot has not demonstrated that connection for us.
No, so the zero evidence.
The characters are operating based on the showrunner's knowledge.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I may not be correct about that. There may be something that is going to help it all hang together in the next episode. But I'm just going based on my reaction to what I have seen in this episode as a unit. And yeah. it was the least satisfying episode of the entire season for me. And I want to compare it to The Devil's Court, which has similar wild stuff sort of coming out of nowhere. You know, it doesn't have, Devil's Court doesn't have an internal logic to it, but it has an internal sequence. Weird thing follows other weird thing. But it's a story. It's a story with a beginning, middle, and end. Because this is a part one, because it is building up to the reveal of a villain from the 1970s, and we'll definitely get to that in a minute. You know, that's the moment of satisfaction at the end of the episode should be the reveal of the villain, should be somehow meaningful. And instead it doesn't. And then we get the classic to be continued at the end kind of thing that RTD sort of saved for, I believe, the end in time was the only time that he did that.
Yeah.
And it's just not, it just doesn't feel earned to me. Or he did not make the sale to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there, we've been watching these stories avidly and wondering what the mystery is, but this episode assumes that it's all connected and it's all of one piece, or at least wants us to think that. And again, we don't know, but I'm not convinced, and I don't think that there was enough evidence to do it, and that frustrates me. There are a lot of questions here, and I think some of them are questions that's like, you don't want to ask, or the answer is coming later. I do wonder if he's planting like stories within stories within stories here, and that the return of Sutek is not actually related to the mystery of Ruby Sunday, or it's connected in some way, but they aren't the same. And I wonder that also about the I felt baffling scene where Mrs. Flood, who we met in the house on, or the church on Ruby Road, and says, don't you know what a TARDIS is at the end? Here is, you know, the moment that she's left alone with Ruby's grandmother. She's sinister and she's like, oh, I've been waiting for this for a long time. And it's like, well, I honestly don't know. Is she related to the Sutek plot at all? I still don't know. Like, it could be because they're in the same episode, but it could also be that there's like another plot going on that is a different character, a different villain that is about this. So that's frustrating.
It doesn't have to be frustrating. I want to give it a little bit of temporal grace, if you will. I mean, there's been a quote floating out there that RTD has some plots underway that are going to carry through the second season. So
sure,
all of this stuff doesn't have to intersect. Mrs. Flood, Ruby's parentage, Sutek, these could actually be three completely separate circles on the Venn diagram. They could be. And I'm willing to give Mrs. Flood sort of a pass because that feels like it's something that could be relevant next week, could be relevant in season two. Who knows?
Could be. I just in an episode where everything's smushed together, it starts to feel like we can't tell. Like I don't know what he's doing. And again, not having the resolution, maybe this is the thing where you think the big bad is defeated at the end of next week, and then you discover that the thing that you forgot is Mrs. Flood with a grandmother and maybe some other details, and you realize there's a whole other thing going on about Ruby that wasn't about saving the world from Sutek, and therefore, right? Like, but we can't judge that. I will say, you mentioned End of Time. I wanted to mention, one of my frustrations is that we spent a lot of time wondering about Ruby's parentage when a mysterious billionaire is going to make an address to the world, which would seem to be priority one since it's a ticking clock. And I don't understand that. That's the part that really I just don't understand. And also such a cliche of Russell T. Davis, where there's a mysterious billionaire without really any characteristics of any kind who's making a mysterious pronouncement that somehow is going to be done worldwide. And it's a thing about computers where computers are going to be good. They're going to give us things, which is just very hand-wavy Russell T. Davis. He does that kind of stuff a lot. I was reminded of, including the random billionaire in The End of Time who is not important at all. It had some of that vibe to it. But again, if that is the moment, the ticking clock, then maybe Ruby's story, you know, again, it needs to either feel more linked or you should set that aside, Doctor, because there's this whole other issue going on. And the show frustrates me because I think it's acting like it knows more than I do about it. And the Doctor knows more about it than I do about it. But it doesn't seem right to me that those things should be placed like that, other than that it's the finale of a TV show, right? So that I am frustrated by that whole thing. I'm also frustrated because, again, maybe they'll explain this next week, but like, why was Susan Triad, why was she scattered across time and being run into by the Doctor? Why did she have those nightmares? She's obviously a servant of Sutek, but why? Like, why was she in those other places? Was that part of his plan? Was that, it's not, like, I don't know. It doesn't. There's no explanation for it, and that's fine, but I'm not convinced there is an explanation for it,
right?
And that we'll get one.
Yeah, that's an area where I'm willing to be patient. It's hard for me to imagine that we won't get an explanation for that next time. If we don't
take it on faith, I guess.
I mean, if we don't get an explanation next week, it's just. It's there because it's cool.
Yeah.
And I'm a Russell T. Davis fan. And I am, you know, of the three previous showrunners, RTD1 was my favorite. I'm able to take a lot in the because it's cool, category. But I got limits, and this was kind of one of it. You know, you were talking about all of that time that we spent on Ruby's parentage and all of that time we spent in the holodeck when the Susan Twist mystery is still out there. I'm sorry, I keep mixing them all up. Susan Twist, it's so confusing.
Yes.
But I think the technical term in British filmmaking is faffing about. And I think that the first 20 minutes of this episode are entirely that. A lot of characters telling and not showing or not demonstrating, you know, how important the mystery of Ruby Sunday is and who they are and all of that. It's a waste of these characters and it's a waste of these actors. I think that Bonnie Langford is great. Gemma Redgrave is great. And Shuti Gatwa and Millie Gibson are great as usual. You know, the new science advisor, he's pretty good, although I'm not sure where our previous science advisor went and why we don't have her.
Not available for the shoot, apparently, is all, and we'll be back next season. But yes, just kind of introduced, and then here's another one.
Yeah, so a lot of these characters spend a lot of time... what was that game? Was it SimCity or something like that? Where when you're loading the game, it would give you updates and it'd do these nonsense phrases like reticulating splines. All of these characters are giving nonsense right. commands, reading nonsense stuff. It's sort of a RTD camp kind of thing that he loves doing in his stories. They spend so much time on that and so little time on advancing the actual plot, on giving the viewer actual information that brings the story forward.
I know that some people were bored by it, and I did think it dragged, but I'll tell you, I think the idea of trying to get to the bottom of Ruby's history when the doctor says, I can't go there because I've already been there, and using some weird time window technology, there's a fun moment where like, oh, doctor, you said for us not to do it. He says, yeah, but where is it? And she says, it's 10 floors down. And that we are using this weird memory technology. And he says, oh, but memories are time. And what's a memory of a TARDIS? But a time machine, but a memory TARDIS, maybe, if you will. All of that, and then the weird holodecky kind of thing, and having to go get the videotape and coming back with her mom, like all that was weird and spooky and interesting. And I feel like if it had been given its own story, I would have found that interesting, the idea of returning to memories and revisiting memories and the timelines shifting and things like that. But the fact that that is going on at length while there's a ticking clock for a mysterious, sinister billionaire who obviously is, as our scientific advisor would tell us, a very high probability of it being a trap. I just keep coming back to that. It's like, I don't think the idea is bad on its face, but like, I just don't understand why they're doing this when that's happening, since we've not been given the clarity that we need to, that we need to hear what's going on. So
I think I agree with you, Jason. I think that any of these elements, if they were properly fleshed out, could have been interesting, could have been valuable. There's a lot to unpack with the reasons that Ruby is seeking closure for her childhood.
Yeah.
And all of that stuff. That if you are going to take the time could be really, really compelling. But because it's mixed in with all of this other stuff, it's part of the compression of the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have defended in the past, we can either explain the cool thing for 5 minutes screen time, or we can do the cool thing and then we can go to the next cool thing. That second option is Russell T. Davis's strategy, and more often than not, I'm on board. I just feel like reached a threshold. It reached a threshold for me, where You've gone too fast. I want these moments to have more meaning and more weight rather than the spectacle.
So I've always been opposed, and we talked about this in our very first episode for the season, opposed to the idea like, oh, Ruby is just a plot device because of her parentage and she's not a character. And I don't agree. She is a character, but it doesn't help matters when her whole history and origin and all of that, instead of being a magical mystery where snow appears and things like that, suddenly in this episode, it's a plot device. And although there's some emotion there, I felt like it just got chained to the rest of this story where there was a ticking clock and we have to find out her face. And we have to see who it is because reasons, like, because maybe we'll know something then. And that part actually really frustrated me because instead of it being kind of a beautiful story about not only the mystery of Ruby, but Ruby kind of wanting to know. Remember, when we meet Ruby, she's doing Who Do You Think You Are? She's trying to find out about her parentage. This has been I know it's in shorthand, but this has been a quest of hers for a while. It's obviously meaningful to her. And yet in this episode, it ends up being what feels like a rush to get to the ticking clock instead of taking the time and having it be about her emotional journey. And I think that that's probably part of my reaction to it, is that it feels much more plotty than feeling in a show that is really about the feelings. And it's just very frustrating.
When Russell T. Davis's shows are at their best, maybe that's it, you know. Russell's shows are at their best when they lean into the feeling.
Yeah, the plot is there to elicit heightened feelings, right? That's why it's there.
Exactly.
And I didn't feel that this
was about this was about nothing more than the plot, except for the feeling of, oh my God, it's Sutek, and that's what the anagrams mean and all that stuff. Can we talk about Sutek for a minute?
Does anybody? Well, I'll say as a footnote to that, I'm getting really tired of the moment you figure out somebody's actual name, the video changes to be that thing so you can be like reinforced about it. Like, is Sutek really sort of like, as they figure it out, Sutek is, or the doctor is dancing around the little letters and coming up with it like it's on an iPad or something? I don't know. I just, that's a shorthand that kind of bugs me. It feels like it's a little underestimating the viewer to do that, but okay. Anyway, so yes, we get Sutek, the Egyptian god of death, who was previously seen in 1975, I want to say, in Pyramids of Mars, a four-part. You know, you just saw it.
Tom Baker adventure. Yeah, confession time. Here's what I got. Before today, I had never watched Pyramids of Mars.
This episode did something good then, didn't it, Chip? It got you to watch Pyramids of Mars, an all-time classic.
Jason, I didn't like Pyramids of Mars. So
Sutek is supreme.
I did like seeing the stagehand's hand on Sutek's throne when he stood up.
So what I think the reason that people love Sutek and love Pyramids of Mars is because it's a terrifying enemy, so powerful that the plot is essentially you can't let him out or everything will end. And so it's like an enemy that the doctor can't beat. The doctor can only prevent from beating him by keeping him in his box. And it's scary and foreboding in that way. And I think that's what resonates with people down through the ages. Now, whether anybody watching on, you know, anybody who knows anything about this series or the entire new series era since 2005 will care at all about a character in one classic episode who's really essentially not ever seen until the very end, briefly.
Yeah. Even though I've never seen every episode of the classic series, I am steeped enough in Doctor Who lore and fandom that, you know, I'm familiar with the character's name. I have seen images of the character. You know, so that name has some resonance. And yet it's not, you know, it's not the Daleks, it's not the Cybermen, it's not any number of historical figures or The toy makers pantheon, other members of the pantheon, is Sutek the boss? Who knows? But the big reveal here is a villain that hasn't been seen on television since the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And we don't know anything about it other than what we get in the episode that we got in the episode 20 minutes before.
Right.
All we got that was added to him was a name.
I wonder if I thought about this as I was watching it. I wonder if this would be more effective if it leaned a little more into the history with Sutek as Set and Seth as an Egyptian god of death. In a way, and maybe again some of this is coming next week, but like it, the way it was dropped for me came across as classic Doctor Who villain, instead of it being like a terrifying mythological figure who also, yes, did appear in an episode of Doctor Who. But I think the balance was off. I would much rather if this had been when he was ranting or she was ranting or they were ranting together. It's like, you may know me by many names. I am Seth. I am Set. I am death incarnate. I am the devil. I am Satan. I am Sutek. That's the name I want. If it would have been better to like lean into the fact that this is not just an old reference lost on younger viewers, but the literal god of death, because that's, to me, that would be more effective, because then you don't need to know anything to be like, oh, was he in an episode before? Well, it doesn't really matter. It's the devil. I got it. And that I feel like a little bit less of the continuity and a little bit more of the mythology of the world would have gone a long way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there were folks who were perfectly satisfied by it. You know, all they needed was, this is somebody that the doctor knows before, the name, the anagram, wordplay stuff, whatever, reveals that it's somebody that the doctor's got history with and the doctor is extremely concerned about or terrified about or whatever.
I mean, Susan Triad Technology, being short for Sutek, is very funny, but I think not in a good way.
It's too cute. It's just a little too cute.
Well, that's Sutek. He's a stinker. He likes to do little cute things. We all know that about Sutek, the literal god of death and the most powerful force in the universe, is that he just loves those little puns. Man, woo! He can't. That's honestly his Achilles heel. If the doctor defeats Sutek next week by constructing an anagram puzzle that tricks him, woo, man, I will take everything back that I said.
Yeah. In my estimation, knowing Pyramids of Mars doesn't help, doesn't really enrich the story all that much.
No.
Having watched it after The Legend of Ruby Sunday, it didn't retroactively up my estimation of The Legend of Ruby Sunday. Yeah, there's some good stuff here. I've mentioned, like, the characters are great. I love the characters. This was a good Kate episode. Jim Redgrave gives a lot of range, warmth, disapproval of the doctor when one of her people gets killed.
Yes.
And we knew that guy was going to get killed. As soon as he went off screen behind the TARDIS, we know he's a goner. He is a red shirt.
But he turns into like sand or dust and then gets blown away. That was cool. That was pretty cool.
Bonnie Langford was, I thought that she was great in this one. She was being a spy. She was being a spy. Yeah. She never got to be a spy in the classic series, right?
Right. It's good. Somebody pointed out that's a lot of older women in important roles in this episode too, which was cool to see. You don't see that a lot. They tend to be erased. It was good to see that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, counterpoint, Pyramids of Mars, the only female character in the entire story is Sarah Jane Smith.
It's Sarah Jane. Yeah.
The proportion gets completely flipped here. Millie Gibson's performances are good, even though you know, she, the sort of back and forth about when she wants to interact in the holodeck and when she when she's not, you know. You know, those behaviors are script motivated, or not even script motivated. They're plot convenience motivated.
Yeah.
And Judy Gatwa, great range here to, right from the Give Me the Lovin' introduction, when he steps off the TARDIS, his anger and frustration, before the confrontation with Susan, and when Bonnie Langford asks him how he's going to fix it, you know, to get him back on, you know, I'm really loving this hyper emotional doctor. The back and forth about whether or not he could, when they thought that Susan might be his granddaughter, was interesting. That sort of push pull there.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of went nowhere because it's not his daughter. It's a red herring.
Right. I suspect that there's something Susan-related coming this year or next, and that's why we've been primed this way. But this isn't it. I did love, I don't know what you think about this. It's always been mysterious, right? We meet the doctor in 1963 with his granddaughter, and we don't know anything about his child, who presumably had Susan. She's just his granddaughter. And in this episode, all this time later, 60 years later, it is strongly implied by the doctor that the reason that we haven't met Susan's parents is because Susan's parents haven't been born yet, because the doctor is living his life out of sequence, and presumably somebody came to him as the first doctor with Susan and said, "This is your granddaughter, you need to take care of her." That's fun and weird, and I don't know whether they will follow up on that or not, but I find that very interesting.
So. I mean, the 10th Doctor did say that he was a dad once, so yeah. And that was under the same showrunner, but, you know, details.
who knows? Yeah. Who knows what it all means? Oh, also, I'll throw in, we got a mention when, so Rose Noble is in this episode, which I think is kind of fun, and says that her mom works for UNIT, so Donna is being put to work, and the doctor asks how her mom and her uncle are doing, which is funny because, of course, her uncle is the 14th Doctor.
Yep. Yeah. Not that we're likely to see him again for a good long while, but yeah.
But that's okay. He's out there. Yeah. He's taking it. I saw there was somebody did a funny like meme that was basically 14th Doctor when he hears that Sutek is back, and he's just like putting down the sunglasses and just closing his eyes like, "It's not my job anymore. I'm not going to worry about it. Let the other guy handle it. It's not my job."
Of course, and who knows? Who knows? We may get a unexpected cameo of Tennant next time, although I doubt it.
I doubt it, you know, but anything can happen. Never say never. And showrunners lie. We have to say that. I do really
lie.
I suspect, Chip, that given the anagram within an anagram nature of this, that Russell, a lot of what he's doing is sort of like, you think it's one thing, but it's another. And so if I have a prediction for next time, it's that this Sutek thing will get resolved, but right, it'll be like a big asterisk on it, which is, it turns out that by resolving it, you think it resolves all the things, but it turns out, no, actually there are all of these other things, perhaps some of the stuff that we've mentioned here, that are not resolved by it, and that there's a continuing mystery that goes into next year somehow. I suspect he will do that, which is good. Like, I think leaving threads for season two, especially when you went into this whole thing knowing you had two seasons ordered by Disney, I think that you should leave some threads there, and I think that it may be some of the threads with Ruby Sunday that are going to be pulled into the next season. There have been some suggestions of that, so I'm okay with that. I think that might be fun. I don't know what to expect. I mean, in some way it's good. I don't know what to expect for part two, because it's often like a complete random resolution where, you know, we've got the pieces but we can't put them together, and that's because you can't do it because you're missing pieces until next week. Maybe so. I think all we can ask for is that there will be some nice emotional resolution. And hey, the prospect of a whole bunch of Death's Head monster zombies who can touch you and kill you, you know, there'll be some spectacle with that, right? That's undoubtedly going to happen.
Yeah. I predict that I will be far more satisfied by the season finale than I was by this one.
Sure.
And yeah, that would be kind of consistent with a lot of Russell T. Davis's Doctor Who season enders before.
This is I'll just point people back to my previous statements on this podcast, including at the beginning of this season, that there are two Russell T. Davis writers. There's the one who's the showrunner, who feels he needs to do showrunner things at the beginning and end of seasons. And then there's the one who's just a really great writer who writes standalone episodes like Wild Blue Yonder, or a bunch of the ones in the middle of this season. This is that other Russell. This is the one who feels like he feels like it's his job to write these two-part finales, where part one is a lot of shouting and running around and loud music and dramatic reveals and probably wordplay involved in supernatural beings because reasons. And then the peak emotional resolution of the final episode, which I agree with you, he tends to do it very, very well. So in some ways, you know, this episode pays for that episode, but I don't know. I feel like there are other ways to tell these stories, and that he doesn't need to have everything. Like, the structure of this two-parter, at least looking at part one, feels so similar to Army of Ghosts, to The Sound of Drums, and to The End of Time part one. They are so similar. And, you know, again, the part twos tend to have some really special moments in them, but the part ones are hurry plot, loud music setup, cliffhanger to be continued. And that's what we got.
Yeah, that's what we got. I think it'll be okay. But man, I wish I had enjoyed the ride on this one more.
Yeah, I kind of enjoyed the ride in the moment, but it was very much like or at the very end, like that series of reveals, like the music is going, it's very exciting. But yeah, it didn't, yeah, in the end, it didn't feel very fulfilling for me. And maybe it's not, I mean, it's not supposed to, it's to be continued, but like, I don't know. It was just all the scenes in the time window just really frustrated me, because I felt they were simultaneously something we'd been set up for when we met Ruby back at Christmas, and that here was the important resolution. And yet in another way, it felt like it was almost being given short shrift, because it was happening in the midst of this other plot, and it made me always want to go back to the other plot. And that's too bad, because it should have been more meaningful. And I'll stop complaining about it, but like, I don't know. It just, that's the part that really struck me wrong. But like, in those moments at the very end where it's all very operatic and dramatic, like, yeah, that was fun. I don't think Susan Twist, like, she just sort of like falls apart in that moment as Susan Triad, and it's just sort of like, oh, I have blue skin, or I'm a Borg from Star Trek, and and then she just turns into a zombie monster and starts pressing people. And like, again, what was the mystery of this woman? She's gone. She was like some billionaire, I guess. Like, again, I just, it for a lot of setup, it ended up feeling kind of like hollow when we get to her in reality. So that's too bad.
Yeah.
Oh well. There's always next week.
There's
roll
always
on
next week.
Next week.
Yeah. Roll on next week. Last thought that I have is, I was convinced leading up to this two-parter that the ending was going to be seriously meta, playing with that whole fourth wall breaking thing. I'm a little less confident of that now, simply because this story feels much more like vintage RTD season finale stuff. So we'll see. I feel like he's done too much fourth wall breaking in the previous part of this season for him to abandon it completely, but I'm just not sure about it for this season finale.
Well, if it turns out if all this nonsense and storytelling nonsense that's been happening this season is because this is all part of a meta narrative in the land of fiction by the meddling monk or something, I'll be like, okay. I mean, I kind of see that. I will say from, and this will be my last point too, from a meta point of view, as one of our friends pointed out to us, this episode is sort of about going back to your old VHS tapes, which is like where Doctor Who lived back when it was, you know, before it came back. And then like Sutek on a VHS, like, I don't know. I mean, that, yeah,
haven't
maybe
thought of that.
There's some stuff there. But all will be revealed next week. Also being revealed will be Erica, who will be back. She's on Verity this week. Chip, I assume you will have some more thoughts at some point at the 2 Minute Time Lord podcast as well.
Yeah, I think we're going to get 2 episodes this week, one for this and one for Pyramids of Mars, because damn it, I had to watch it. I've got to do something with it.
Yeah, you gotta make some content with that. All right, next week we will be back, and we'll be talking about it, and we'll be saying goodbye for the season, which is also sad, but also fun to have a finale to talk about. So we'll all be back then. But until next week, Chip Sutter, thank you for being here with me today and watching this and all the homework that was attached to it.
All right. You're very welcome, Jason. We'll see you next week.
All right. Bye, everybody. Doctor Who Flashcast on the Incomparable. Doctor Who Flashcast. Doctor Who Flashcast. Doctor Who Flashcast.